Well, hello out there once again in Radio Land. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio, ready for another stimulating, amusing, wisecracking, but highly informative program. And to help me disseminate such information and nourishment to brain cells and sense of humor receptacles is my microphone mate, brother in broadcasting, the official presidentologist and historical commentator and expert provider of knowledge of this station and the entire universe, is Dr. Ronald L. Feynman. L, of course, stands for lots of great information. Contrary to popular belief, it does not stand for liberal. It stands for lots of great information. So, little chilly here
for inviting me.
Taping time here in mid-Ohio, but I'm sure in Florida where you are, Ron, it's warm and sunny and summer-like, and the palm trees are blooming.
Yes, they are.
Well, that's good to hear. We have lots of dandelions and lots of crabgrass, but otherwise, spring has springing and has sprunging here in the mid-Ohio area. Ron joins us fairly frequently here on The Talking Place to talk about politics and what's going on there in Florida and his not-so-favorite governor with the name that he likes, Ron DeSantis, and whatever else might be occurring. Now, since we last did a brand new program, Ron, you were on with Scott E. Spears, the interviewer to the stars. E, of course,
absolutely,
for Scott's
great
middle name stands for everyone who's important or slightly important is on his program, be it Phil Donahue or Dick Cavett or the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams, Bill Cosby, you name it, that person is on the program. And as you know, Ron, being on with Scott is not quite the same as being on with me. We joke around a little more. I'm more likely to provide my opinion, but we kind of agree there are some things that we try to stay away from in terms of controversy.
Yes.
But, you know, with Scott, he doesn't mind challenging you. Heard the program. It was quite good, and it was delicious, say the least. If folks have not heard the program, we encourage them to go to our esteemed website, maintained, programmed, and curated by yours truly, WWGH1071.com, and listen to said broadcast. And what's your impression, Ron, out of your program earlier in April with Scott Spears? Did it go well? Did you learn anything? Did you laugh enough? What's the main scoop there?
It was fantastic. He's always great. I wish I could be on with him more regularly, but I know he's got lots of people to interview and lots of other things to do. But it was a great show, and I would give it as Professor A+.
So he gets an A+ grade and extra credit and even a gold star. Well, that's good to hear. Hopefully the experience with me is almost as good. Certainly a lot more laughs.
B+.
B+. Okay, well, that's good. B stands for bone, meaning funny bone, because we do laugh more. And, you know, I say if you can't laugh, and why bother?
Yeah.
The world's too messed up otherwise. You know, it's getting close to primary election time. We have your previous brother of broadcasting, Glenn Coble, running as a Democrat in the mayoral election. He's unopposed, so he'll win. But the hotly contested Republican primary is longtime law enforcement officer Bill Collins and concerned citizen and frequent caller to the station, Susan McGowan. Interesting thing about Susan is she's almost the exact same age that I am. Kind of looked that up, and I guess that year that we were born, I'm not going to mention what year it was, but let's say it was the beginning of the Lyndon Johnson presidency, not the Andrew Johnson presidency, the Lyndon Johnson presidency was a good year. And you know, we have three candidates. I think they all have their advantages, and we shall see exactly what transpires. But
Well, Susan McGowan, you call her more liberal than the police officer, I guess.
I would say she probably is a bit to the left. She does seem, she certainly is very much in support of law enforcement, as I am. She seems like she's someone for the people. I don't, you know, want to maybe mention a name that might stir up some tail feathers, Ron, but like Donald Trump in that way, a concerned citizen type person. I mean, not a multi-trillionaire with the controversy like Donald Trump, but kind of this concerned citizen, regular person who really wants to get in there and get her hands dirty and make this great city of Marion function the best that it can. She doesn't have the political experience, but neither do the other two candidates. Certainly, she's very, very involved in social media. I would say she's more of much more of a lady than Donald Trump. You know, that is who isn't a gentleman, but you know, the mean tweets and his sharp tongue are, I guess, part of his appeal. I mean, certainly, love him or hate him, he certainly will get his word out there. And Susan, I think, is a bit like that. I mean, she's been very. She watches my videos when I've done live videos, when I've done shows with Scott or other circumstances. She does call in. She's commented about the city auditor scandal. So she's a concerned citizen, definitely has the one of us mentality, which I think is good. And Glenn is also a bit like that. Glenn is older. You know, he's about 20 years older, but he's young for his age, still very spry. And certainly well to the left of the two Republican candidates. And again, as a radio person, someone with sports coaching experience, those are certainly great qualities if you do step up to being the mayor of a small city like Marion. Bill Collins, a longtime, well-respected law enforcement officer, former police chief, not someone who's had the elected political office, but certainly making sure things are safe. People can feel safe walking out their door at 2 a.m. as they are at 2 p.m., fixing this severe drug problem we have, I mean, worldwide, but it certainly is prevalent in this part of the country. Those are things.
Yeah, I just looked her up. Yeah, I just looked her up. I see she ran for mayor in 2019 also.
She's persistent. Yeah. Very well spoken. You know, she's worked, I think, for the Department of Transportation. Certainly she has, on a secondary level, I would say, government type experience, but elected office is a little bit different. In terms of politics, neither Republican candidate seems awfully conservative to me. I really couldn't even tell you what Susan feels on some of these more controversial type issues. Glenn, you know, I think quite liberal, and will that or will that not be an issue? Will his being an atheist be an issue? The latter is not an issue to me. The former probably is, but you know, I do certainly do give a sentimental nod to those in the radio business. I like people who have been involved in sports coaching like Glenn is, and you know, Glenn is a good guy, and he will be your friend regardless of whether or not you agree with him. So those are many good qualities of Glenn. You know, Bill Collins, I like his law enforcement experience, his presence. And Susan, kind of cool that she's virtually same age as yours truly, and like that she is a concerned citizen. She's well-spoken. She will say what needs to be done, and I think she would work tirelessly. And again, she has experience working for governmental departments. So, you know, good things about all three candidates, and this mayoral election may end up being one that I think will get national or even with respect to the United States of America, regional, Midwestern type coverage, and we shall see who will win. Obviously, Mr. Collins is favored, but when we take a look at candidates that are favored, for example, the last two presidential elections, and we think the person who is favored is going to win, sometimes we end up being wrong. So don't, you know, as my mama would say, Ron, don't count your chickens until they hatch.
Yeah, anyway, send my regards to Glenn Coble for me, all right?
Yes, we will certainly do that. I call him Glenn Corn on the Cob, L.E., because I have a I have a fun name for all. Adam here with Dr. Ron L. Feinman, our official presidentologist and political commentator here on The Talking Place on my program that's originally going to air on Monday, the last Monday of April. My goodness, my birthday is coming very soon, 4/25/23, but this show is so good, we're going to replay it many times, and of course, it'll be available in our archives at our website, and more than likely, I'll put a link to our Facebook, on our Facebook, to the show, and Ron will also link it from his blog, and his blog is theprogressiveprofessor.com, and boys and girls, we encourage you to read that daily. You may not agree with what he has to say. You might want to throw a rotten egg at your computer, or you might say, well, this Ron guy is one smart cookie. and I enjoy reading it. I will bookmark it, and I will tell all my friends and relatives and enemies and everybody else about said blog.
Yeah.
Recently, Ron, you've put some pretty strong opinions as well as some good knowledge on your blog. It isn't always political or anti-Trump, anti-DeSantis, pro-FDR, pro-Biden. It can vary. Many times it's just history, and you don't always give the most favorable reviews of some of your Democratic politicians, and sometimes there's a Republican or two that you do find to be appealing. But, you know, just adds to the fun, that I always look forward to reading it every day. So wanted to start on a light note. We were talking about this earlier, just to get people giggling a bit, but it's also important presidential history. No secret, Donald Trump wants to become president again, and the only president who served two non-consecutive terms was Grover Cleveland. And
who, by the way, that's not his real name. His name is Stephen Grover Cleveland. He uses his middle name. I don't know why. I would prefer Stephen.
Yeah. And just unlike you and I, we have middle names we don't like. I don't even use mine. I don't like it. Yes. You don't like your middle name. And you know what? I really don't like it either. I like your first name better. You may share it with the governor that you don't like, but, you know, Ron, that's got a good ring to it. RF, like Ralph Furley on Three's Company, or Radio Frequency, or really fantastic. Yeah. So your initials of RF are fairly...
You know, an interesting trivia thing, though, is that a number of presidents use their middle name instead of their first name. Dwight Eisenhower is David Dwight Eisenhower, but he uses Dwight David Eisenhower. Woodrow Wilson is Thomas Woodrow Wilson, and Cleveland is Stephen Grover Cleveland. Those are just three examples. Yeah, I don't know why they choose it.
I think of either Mike Hargrove, because he went by Grover as a nickname, a baseball player known for his long pauses in the batting box, and manager of they were the Cleveland Indians at that time. And I think of Grover, the character on Sesame Street. That's kind of what Grover reminds me of. It's not a name you really hear much of late. I guess if he could go by Steve Cleave, right? I'm Steve Cleave. Grover Cleveland, of course, he was around before Mike Hargrove was associated with the Cleveland baseball team. So I guess there would be some association there, but it was kind of after his time. Yeah. Whatever turns you on, I would definitely go by Steve or Stephen if my name were Stephen Grover Cleveland. But, you know,
two recent presidents have a different name than they were born with. William Jefferson Clinton was actually William Blythe IV.
And, of course...
His father's name. And, of course, Gerald Ford was Leslie King at birth.
Yes, so King and then Ford. That's an interesting little transition.
Yeah, President King it would have been if he kept
Well, that would be kind of fascinating, wouldn't it? I am President King.
And President Blythe instead of Clinton.
not quite a ring to it there.
What I like is that
when President Clinton visited Clinton County, a county in Ohio between Columbus and Cincinnati, he got a really good reception. Yeah. And he kind of said, you know, talking about it being Clinton County, we've had many counties in Ohio named after presidents, Jefferson, Washington, etc. Clinton County wasn't named after President Clinton because it was there before he was, but he did enjoy going there, and that was kind of fun.
I bet Clinton County was named after George Clinton, the Vice President of the United States under Jefferson and Madison. I bet that's who it was.
And, I enjoy language and puns and geography, so it all kinds of tied in together. But
yes.
Anyway, we talked about Grover Cleveland. He served two non-consecutive terms, and Donald Trump is looking to do the same thing. And as I was telling you earlier in the month, Ron, I see two things that Grover Cleveland and Donald Trump would have in common if they were to be the two non-consecutive two-termed presidents. One, well, both overweight. We kind of know that. Grover Cleveland was one of our heaviest presidents, and Donald Trump doesn't look like he's ready for a marathon anytime soon. But I think he's one person who, despite a less than healthy lifestyle, I mean, he's that, you know, type A personality, kind of hyper and kind of intense, seems to eat a lot of cheeseburgers and other unhealthy food, doesn't seem to exercise a lot, and, you know, probably needs to get off the golf cart and join me at the gym. The other thing is Mrs. Cleveland, like Melania Trump, quite a bit younger. In fact, even a bigger difference in age, I think, than Donald and Melania. And like Melania, pretty easy on the eyes. So we would see those two parallels. Now, Mrs. Cleveland, Ron, you told me she was 21 years old. Now, she looked older.
And he was 49.
But, yeah.
49 went, yeah.
Yeah, but in those days, people always looked older. So, you know, she maybe looked like she could be 40 by today's standards, but she was 21 and not bad looking. So that would be one thing that they wouldn't have in common. Do you think that's a good predictor of the future, Ron, that Donald Trump could have these two things in common with another two-term president, or are his hopes of becoming president once again pretty much down the toilet?
I don't think he's going to be president again, and I must say that one of the differences, Grover Cleveland actually won the popular vote three times. The time in between, he lost the electoral vote in 1888 to Benjamin Harrison, but he actually won the popular vote in 1884, 88, and 92, and of course Donald Trump did not win the popular vote in 16 or 20, so it's quite a difference there.
So a difference, certainly. What's your opinion of Grover Cleveland? I don't know much about the presidents before my lifetime or before Franklin Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt, George Washington, Lincoln. I mean, I know a bit about them.
Yeah.
What's the scoop on Cleveland? Was he a good president?
Yeah. Well, Cleveland was the only Democrat since the Civil War until 1912 when Woodrow Wilson was elected. And Woodrow Wilson was only elected because Theodore Roosevelt ran against President Taft, so divided the Republican vote and gave the election, therefore, to Wilson. Cleveland, when I was younger, he was seen as being in the bottom of the top 10, but he has dropped dramatically. He's now down to number 25. He's just above Jimmy Carter, actually. Jimmy Carter's rated 26th in the C-SPAN survey. But I've been telling students Carter will rise, not rise dramatically. I'm not saying he's going to be the top 15, but I think he will rise once he passes. There's a tendency when a president dies that his rating goes up, as with Eisenhower and Truman, for instance. So I think he will rise above Cleveland. But Cleveland's been falling because he was actually no different than the Republican presidents of his time. Very conservative, easily the most conservative Democrat since the Civil War to now. Nobody comes close.
Even more so than Clinton? He was pretty conservative economically.
More so than Clinton, yeah. But Clinton I would call the most conservative other than Cleveland as far as Democrats, yes.
Was there a difference in his approval rating and governing from the first term to that second term? It's weird when you have a hole in your term. I mean, he was like kind of a president of sorts for 12 years. He had that hole in the middle. Do you think he sat back and thought about how to be a better president the second time?
I think so. And actually, his victory in 1892 popular vote was the biggest of the three. He barely won in 84. He did win by a bit in 88, but did not win the Electoral College. But in 92, he really won big. And that was also the year of the Populist Party running, its third party, the Populist Party. But he did very well in 1892. So he had a great impact. And also, another connection, Cleveland later was on the board of Princeton University Board of Trustees, and he was clashing with the president of Princeton named Woodrow Wilson. How's that?
Interesting.
They didn't get along too well.
We talked about Wilson, and kind of surprising in that he was a PhD academic
only one, yes.
Person like yourself, but he was known to be prejudiced. And
oh my gosh, was he?
Certainly.
He was a Southerner from Virginia, his Confederate family. So yes, he really was a white supremacist, and also against women's suffrage. He had women suffragettes arrested for marching outside the White House. They went to jail overnight. He was bent on civil liberties during the First World War. Very narrow-minded, and very stubborn and inflexible. And he thought God, you know, directed him. I don't like people who say God directs them.
It would seem like a person with those beliefs. Now, things were different back then. That's not an excuse. It's just the way the world was. Wouldn't be thought of so highly.
But he was, until recently, when I was in college, he was in the top 10 presidents. He has slipped dramatically, as I point out to my students in the course I just finished. He and Jackson have really collapsed. Now, of course, they're still in the top half, but they really have gone downhill, both of them, dramatically in the last 20, 30 years, and the reputation they've had. They were much higher when I was in college.
Well, things do change, and after a president passes, I mean, Gerald Ford being an example, we tend to put them on a bit of a pedestal. Nothing wrong with that. You just look back and see, well, what could have been, what was. And, you know, Jimmy Carter, again, we love him as a man. I mean, you got to love the guy. And, you know, me, I, you know, love his family. Billy Carter, my favorite presidential sibling by far. But we shall see. He is in hospice care. But knowing Jimmy Carter, he's a fighter. He's not ready to leave this earth anytime soon. So
I wonder if he can still talk, though, and would ever say, we don't hear anything about him. I have a feeling he's in a coma, most likely, but I would hope he isn't, but who knows?
Yeah, we don't really know how he's doing. Like to find out. Maybe we can dig in and see exactly, and who knows? Sometimes people are in hospice care for a long time, and with Jimmy Carter again, he's a fighter. He's not ready to leave this earth anytime soon.
I know someone whose mother was in hospice for 5 years before she passed. Imagine that.
That would put Jimmy Carter at the 100 mark. Wouldn't that be pretty cool?
103 he would be if he made 5 years.
Adam here with Dr. Ron Fineman talking about politics, presidents, and other fun stuffy-wuffy here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. And your blog, Ron, theprogressiveprofessor.com, has had many interesting entries in the last few days. And we talk kind of on the side about Cleveland and Trump. I mean, if Trump were to win, and before we get to the next topic, if he were to win in 2024, not saying he will, would he be any different? Would he be a little less of a loudmouth? Would he be a little more centrist? Who do you think might be a vice presidential candidate? I don't think he and Pence would still be in office together. What are some of your thoughts if that does happen? Because it is possible.
I think it'd be a nightmare because he's talked about revenge and retribution. And I think he'd try to totally destroy the civil service. He's actually made a claim of that. And also the intelligence agencies and the State Department. I think it would be extremely damaging. As far as who he might run with, there's no way to know. But certainly a couple of different women who are really crazy would love to be his running mate. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Carrie Lake. And oh, my God. I mean, can you imagine either of those people a heartbeat away? Because if he was in office at his age, when it's overweight, he could die, and they would have Carrie Lake or Marjorie Taylor Greene, in theory, as president. That is even more horrifying.
That would certainly be quite different from the current president, wouldn't it?
Yes.
So, on the 17th of April, Ron, you write about Kevin McCarthy. He hasn't been Speaker of the House for very long, but you're saying his tenure is in danger. He did pretty much become Speaker by the hair of his chinny chin chin, right? That is, it was a very close mark. So what's up with that? How could that happen? And if it does, who would be his successor?
I would say his successor might be the second-ranking Republican, Steve Scalise of Louisiana, who was shot, if you remember, in that congressional baseball game back in 2017. They're not getting along too well either now. They seem not to be talking to each other. And I think there's a chance that that could happen, because if he only has a 5-seat edge, if he loses 5 votes, then it means that he would lose the speakership on any issue. And I think he's not going to last as Speaker, but I'm scared of what could be the alternative. It could be someone else. It may not be even Steve Scalise. There's no way to be certain. But the lunatic, as I call it, Freedom Caucus, is in control of the agenda, and they're ready to let the government go bankrupt in the next few months, and that's not acceptable. Imagine having, as I said, Matt Gaetz or Jim Jordan from your area, or Marjorie Taylor Greene or Lauren Boebert, as having more impact than they already have. That's just really scary.
What's the chance of that happening?
I think it's hard to say. I would say it's close to 50-50. I think it's a good chance McCarthy will be ousted as Speaker. It's happened before when Speakers have been ousted in a 2-year term. It's not the only time. It's rare, but it has happened.
So it's possible, and it's in that we shall see category.
I wouldn't say it's definite, but I think it's close to 50-50. It really depends on how this goes with this issue of the debt limit. It's a very hot issue, and it's really going to be damaging to the country if we do not overcome that issue in time by June.
One of the hot political issues, Ron, it's been that way just about my whole lifetime, and one that we do agree on is a woman's right to have an abortion. We do agree that abortion, most cases, is wrong, but it's not our place, especially as men, to decide that. It should be legal. Yes. It should be safe. Whether it should be covered by health insurance, that's another issue. But there's the abortion pill, the medical abortion versus the surgical abortion. Interesting thing you wrote on the 19th, April, reality, most anti-abortion states were slave states before 1865. Now, do you see a connection there, or is it just that the South is more religiously conservative? What's kind of your take on that?
Well, the fact is religion endorsed slavery, Christianity I'm talking about, and religion believes that women should not have control of their body. I'm talking about the Orthodox of any religious group in the Christian faith, like the evangelicals or the hardline Catholics. And the fact is they were willing to accept slavery 200 years ago, and they don't care about women and their health and safety. They care more about unborn children, but they don't seem at the same time, these people, to care enough to do something about gun problems in this country with all these murders going on. So we have a Republican Party and the Christian evangelicals who are very hypocritical, to say the least.
So you feel they're not being consistent. And, you know, religion, it's always a fascinating topic, and I think we kind of agree on a comparative religion basis. There are Christianity denominations that are more, we say liberal, even though that doesn't necessarily mean liberal politically. Open-minded. And Judaism, too, is kind of fascinating in that Reform Judaism, abortion is completely accepted. Conservative Judaism generally is.
But not Orthodox or Hasidic, no.
And Orthodox and Hasidic being quite different. And
yes. Orthodox and Hasidic also support Trump, by the way, and basketball, but other Jews do not.
So it's the same umbrella of religion, but very different beliefs politically.
It's just like evangelicals support Trump, but other groups do not. I want to point out the term, I've met so many people, and some people might not like me saying this, who say, I'm a good Christian, in quote. To me, a good Christian is a Jimmy Carter kind of good Christian. That is really what a good Christian is, the teachings of Jesus. And Jimmy Carter represents that, people like Jimmy Carter. And that's why I honor him, because too many Christians are really not good Christians because they have narrow-minded, intolerant views. And to me, that's not being a good Christian or a good Jew or a good Muslim. And it might upset some people listening, but that's the way I see it.
Well, religion certainly is a hot topic, and that's one where Ron and I tend to agree, and I think it's a big one, and we can certainly find a common ground. In your blog on the 22nd of April, you write about the Supreme Court justices appointed by father and son Bush, Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito, that they're out of control, abusing their positions. And on this blog, interestingly, basically say something good about Amy Coney Barrett, nominated by President Donald J. Trump. Explain that. And Clarence Thomas has been controversial since he was awarded his gavel, and Samuel Alito. And what are the opinions? Brett Kavanaugh also. How do Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett compare to the judges appointed by the Bushes? Are they actually better? Is Clarence Thomas the worst?
Well, I think Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito are both, of course, Thomas has been there longer, but I think they're the two worst. But I get the feeling because of this vote 7-2 that allowed the abortion drug to be kept going for the time being, although it shouldn't even be an issue, it should be automatic. The fact that he, Alito, came out and condemned by name three female justices, two of them the Democrats, Sotomayor and Kagan. He didn't pick on the newest judge, Ketanji Brown Jackson, because she's only been there a short time, but condemned those two and, shockingly, Amy Coney Barrett, accused them of hypocrisy. And I get the feeling there is a lot of bad blood. They took so much time to decide what to do. And I think Roberts, the Chief Justice, is trying to figure out how to handle the whole situation. And I get the feeling that what's going to come out, I hope I'm right, that the three liberal justices appointed by Democrats, plus Roberts and at least Barrett, and maybe more than that, will back the abortion drug continuing, I think, because I think Alito makes a lot of enemies by his whole arrogance and nastiness, and so does Thomas, and I don't think they're a nice group. I don't think they're very happy together, the nine of them.
So Amy Coney Barrett, she certainly is not a pro-choice person as a woman.
No.
But she voted in support of the abortion pill.
Yes.
Which is good.
For the time being.
Yeah, and I respect that. You shouldn't allow your personal biases to affect it. That's fine if she is not a pro-choice person as a human, but as a justice, do you need to be impartial?
And I think Kavanaugh and Gorsuch you know, they're conservative, but they're not hard line like Alito and Thomas. So there's some hope. It could even be a 7-2 vote for the ultimate decision, because that's what it was here.
Certainly with...
without them saying anything, but 7-2, you know.
With Kavanaugh, like with Thomas, there were questions about his morality, let's say that.
Yes.
As he went up to be examined, to be a possible justice. And, you know, we know he's not a saint, you know, but I'm not a saint, you're not a saint, and we don't expect that. But we certainly applaud him for not allowing his own bias to affect his decision. Certainly like Amy Coney Barrett, very smart, well-educated, well-qualified. So maybe our opinion of him can improve. We don't expect perfection in human beings, but the fact that they didn't allow their personal biases to interfere, I tip my cap to them, and I think Ron would agree, and it's good to see that.
But it's not final. I want to see it final, not just tentative.
Let's hope they're not teasing. And, you know, with Coney Barrett, you would agree, she has some great qualifications and many things about her making her a good jurist. And if she can just keep her personal beliefs out, she could be one of our best justices ever. And I'd like to see that.
And it is interesting. We have four women on the court. Imagine that. Or, you know, and it's funny because one of them is a Jewish woman, one is a African-American woman, one is an Hispanic woman, and one is a white Christian woman.
I think we should have a diversity that reflects the demographics of the United States. But a justice should not be chosen just because he or she is a member of a certain demographic. And that's
a lot of the reason why
Mr. Biden chose Ketanji Brown Jackson. And I don't like that. And there are things about her that I'm not fond of, like she refused to define what a woman is. I think, especially since she is one, she should know that. certainly, in an intellectual level, they're very qualified, but I have some issues with her. But we'll see.
We could bring up jokingly, the issue is actually Michelle Obama a woman? Some people think she isn't.
Yeah, no, I believe that she is. She has a gym bod going, and I applaud her for that. You know, I'm big on fitness. Also, Michelle and I are pretty close to the same age, and I think as I said, she would be the first lady that I would most like to go to the gym with. As I mentioned, there are first ladies fitting many different categories, and she certainly would be in that fitness one, and I applaud her for that. I wasn't a big fan of her initially. My opinion of her has really improved. I do like her, and she's cool, very, very smart.
She made clear on a talk show this week that, you know, about that she's glad she's not in the White House anymore and that she doesn't miss it. So there's no chance she would ever run for president. She has no.
Yeah, I think she likes being a private citizen, and that's a good thing. Ron's blog, again, theprogressiveprofessor.com. We encourage you to read it, as there's all kinds of good stuff on it. And let's go to a recent blog. Now, there's another person named Ron, who's well-educated in the state of Florida. But our Ron, Dr. Feinman, is not a big fan of him. And that would, of course, be his Republican governor, Ron DeSantis. DeSantis is thought of as a presidential candidate, maybe our next president. Maybe he has some other aspirations. And you write that he is falling fast in competition with Donald Trump. So what's going on with
now,
that?
Yes. Well, the polls have shown, of course, polls are polls, and they're always accurate, that he was ahead by, I think, 15 points a few months ago. But now he's fallen behind. And it's not just this poll. Others have said he's really lost momentum, and he hasn't even announced yet. And I think a lot of it is because of his battle against Disney World. Is also his you know, promotion of abortion laws to make it only 6 weeks, which is really radical. Also interfering with having an African-American history advanced placement course in the state. And there's so many other issues that he's become highly controversial. And he comes across as someone that is not friendly and warm and cuddly, and not saying everybody has to be, but if you compare him to Joe Biden, who's very friendly, warm, and cuddly, you know, it's just a big, you know, even Trump comes across as more personable than does DeSantis. So I do think it's affected the state university system and the whole education profession in Florida. And it's a real crisis for the state. The state really has many issues that he's not dealing with. And, you know, I think I just see him as another Scott Walker or Jeb Bush that he's running, or he hasn't announced, but supposedly he'll run, but he will not be able to be the nominee.
So you, in some ways, find Donald J. Trump to be more likable as a human than Ronald DeSantis.
I don't like Trump, but I think Trump comes across better as far as you can relate to him more than you can to DeSantis, who's very distant. He doesn't know how to really shake hands and do the small talk, as they say. He's very stiff in that sense. And he might try to change the way he is, but he comes across as arrogant and nasty in a way that I think a lot of people are turned off to. Yeah. And it's showing up in the polls of the Republican Party. It's not even the national thing. It's the Republican Party. He's not being favored anymore. And all those Republican House members in Florida, most of them have come out for Trump, which I was surprised by.
So as a Floridian, you didn't vote for him, of course, in the last election. Is there anything you like about...
I voted for Charlie Crist. Yeah.
Anything you like about your governor, Ron DeSantis? Besides, he's well-educated, well-qualified. We like that. Anything on his views that you like about the guy?
The only thing in the beginning, in 2019, he did promote some environmental regulation laws that were good. That was the only thing I can really think of. But that was very early the first year. And I was saying, I was a little impressed for a few months. But then... once the pandemic came, and after that, and then with everything else with Disney World, he's really lost momentum. And Disney World, you can't win a fight against Mickey Mouse. You really can't. It's gonna backfire on him. And North Carolina, I don't think it's gonna happen, has proposed, why doesn't Disney World eventually move to North Carolina? I don't see that happening. But if they did leave Florida, that would be a real devastating effect on the economy of the state. It's the second biggest employer in the state and brings in billions of dollars every year to the state. So it's not something you should be messing with, telling them what they can back, as far as their attitude on legislation. I think it's a big mistake on his part, and it's going to doom him as far as being president.
Ron, Donald Trump is helped by controversy. We would agree. That's his modus operandi. Isn't that really helping DeSantis? Agree or disagree, doesn't that really help him and puts him in the spotlight and causes people to think about how the world's doing?
Yes, but the thing is, Trump is on a bitter attack against him, and Trump is very effective at attacking his opponents and destroying them. And I don't know if that could be overcome, because there's so many MAGA people out there that they're willing to vote for him no matter what happens, which scares me for the national level. But honestly, I don't think he's going to be able to overcome it, DeSantis, because Trump has a bigger following than DeSantis would ever have, I think.
Now, since we talked last time, Donald Trump was arrested, indicted, and he was released on his own recognizance. I know we don't have a crystal ball, but is he going to go to prison? Is he going to get a fine, or will this keep dragging on for the next 20 years?
Oh, God, that's 20 years. I'm not sure on this case that he'll be convicted, but there are the more important cases involving the documents at Mar-a-Lago, the January 6th insurrection, and the Georgia interference that he got. Those are the more serious ones. And I do think he's going to end up being convicted at some point. As far as what that would mean, as far as jail time, I have no way of knowing. But I do think that those are much more serious issues than the one involving the Manhattan DA.
So, more interesting stuff down the pike, for sure. And just when you thought you
figured it out. Well, also, this E. Jean Carroll case, which is a civil case, is beginning about accusations of rape. That can't lead to any jail time, but it could lead to, to civil lawsuits where he ends up having to pay. But that would not help his reputation if indeed he's convicted on that, although it would not lead to jail time.
Adam here with Dr. Ron Fineman. As my mama always said, time flies when you're having fun. Just a few minutes left. Again, please read Ron's blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, and here are the hundreds and hundreds of shows that he's had on this station with me, Glenn, Scott, and whoever else on our website, WGH1071.com. Earlier in April, Ron, you wrote about Senator Dianne Feinstein. She has had a long, distinguished career. She was mayor of San Francisco, and she's a senator. She's pushing the big 9-0 in the age department, and you feel that she has lost her sharpness, and it's time for her to resign. Any thoughts on her?
She's a great senator, but she's been there for 30 years, but she's no longer able to do her job. She's been gone because of shingles, and of course that doesn't necessarily mean you won't come back. But right now it's holding up the ability to confirm judicial appointments because the Senate only has a one-seat edge on every committee, and with her not there, it's a tie vote. So I think it's time for her to leave, and I even wrote an article that got published on History News Network about that and about the fact that we could end up with the oldest first-term elected senator possibly in American history if we indeed get the approval of Barbara Lee, who's one of the three contenders for her position next year. If she was to win, she'd be 78 starting her term. And I'm not so sure that's so good, but she'd be the oldest first-time elected senator if she did come in, and she's African-American. And she could be appointed, if Feinstein left, to be possibly the replacement until the election. But I'm not sure that would happen, because that would give her an edge over Katie Porter and Adam Schiff. So I did not write that article on History News Network, which just came out. But I did suggest, or I have told other people, that I think alternatives, I'm curious what you think about this, is someone to just finish the term if Feinstein leaves, not to run for the seat. And one of them would be African-American, and one would not be African-American. But indeed, I thought of possibly, imagine this, what about Nancy Pelosi leaving the House and becoming a senator for a year and a half? What do you think of that?
That's a possibility, not one that I would personally support, but
yeah,
it certainly does seem feasible, doesn't it? Now, she's no spring.
That would be fascinating. Yeah,
she's no spring chicken herself, although she seems pretty young for 81, I guess she is. So
she's 83, actually. 83. But the other one, who's African American, is 85 and has a mouth that's unbelievable. It's Maxine Waters. Imagine if she became a senator for a year and a half.
That would certainly spice things up, wouldn't it?
She is unbelievable, but she's 85, so maybe if either one said, okay, I will leave at the end of 2024, they could be a senator for a year and a half if Feinstein left as an appointment, maybe more likely Maxine Waters, because he had said he was going to pick an African-American woman, but he shouldn't pick Barbara Lee, because that would give an unfair advantage to her for the election. That's up to the voters, but he probably could pick Maxine Waters or Nancy Pelosi. That's my thought. I think that'd be really amazing. They both have big mouths, and they'll say their piece for a year and a half in the Senate.
It would certainly keep people awake, wouldn't it?
And it would certainly cause Donald Trump to probably have his blood pressure go up.
Yeah, Donald would be feasting on that, wouldn't he?
Yes.
We thank you folks for listening. Always a good time here when we speak with Dr. Ron Feinman on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Again, read his blog, read his book about presidential assassinations. Follow him on Facebook. Follow him on Twitter under PolitHist, PolitHist. He promises no mean tweets, only good information, and an occasional laugh or two. Again, he was on with Scott Spears earlier in April. Please visit Scott's section on our website to listen. You might find some differences in that program versus the programs with me, but bottom line is, whenever you hear a program with Dr. Ron Feinman, your brain cells and your funny bone will be very thankful, to say the least. Before we say adios, auf Wiedersehen, and sayonara today, Ron, anything you'd like to leave our information or thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Okay, well, I want to mention that I wrote an article on Generation Z turning blue on abortion, guns, and voting rights. I think that's very significant. Younger voters are certainly not going to the Republican Party on the issue of abortion or on gun regulation on voting rights, because Republicans are really working against women's rights, against gun regulation, and against voting rights. A lot of them don't want college students, for instance, to be able to register to vote. And I think that's really going to have an effect on the political future, that so many younger voters are turning blue, not red. That was on April 20th.
Yeah, good stuff. It seems like when I was in college, the trend, of course, Reagan being president, was to be conservative, and things kind of go in cycles, and right now it would seem that our young people are oriented on the left, but who knows?
Can't be sure, but I think it's a likelihood the way it seems, yes.
Yeah. Stay tuned, and maybe next generation it'll be different. That's all part of the fun of living in this great country. Adam here, thanking you for listening.
Thank you.
Any questions, comments, suggestions, complaints, or other thoughts, I invite your emails on our private email server, adam at WWGH1071.com.